This is the RightsCast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing and the Wisconsin Writers Association, and always streaming at rightscast.net. You want the coffee? You can't handle the coffee, he said, not at all invoking a line from a famous film that he can't actually name. Yeah, we're talking about coffee, so forget everything I just said except for the part about coffee. It's coffee time. We're talking about 421 Brewhouse specifically and their fantastic, sustainable approach to getting coffee in your mug or in your travel mug or whatever it is you choose to drink coffee out of. If you're like me and you love coffee and you believe in drinking it sustainably, well, 421 Brewhouse will deliver their coffee to you in a reusable, resealable pouch. That's right. You can keep using this long after the coffee is gone, which will happen rather quickly because if you're like me, and you are probably, I don't know, maybe not, but if you're like me, you'll drink this coffee up in a hurry. So to take a percentage off your order of 421 Brewhouse coffee, head to their Shopify page by searching for 421 Brewhouse and using code RightsCast at checkout to get yourself a nice little discount. It'll let them know that RR sent you, and that's not a bad thing at all. So again, 421 Brewhouse coffee, drink it. I read, you read, we all read for Read Scream or something, whatever. The point is, I like to read, and you do too, or most writers do anyway. And if you're not yet in a position to get paid for your writing, wouldn't getting paid to read be the next best thing? Well, this episode's guest certainly thinks so, and she's made a living reading books to the point that, well, she wrote the book about getting paid to read books. Hey there. I'm author, writing coach, and RightsCast Network founder, R.R. Campbell, and welcome to episode 80 of your listener-supported R.R. Campbell RightsCast here on the RightsCast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing and the Wisconsin Writers Association. For this episode, I'm joined by Jenny Nash, the founder and chief creative officer of Author Accelerator, a company on a mission to help writers write books worth reading. For 12 years, writers serious about reaching readers have trusted Jenny to coach their projects from inspiration to publication. Her clients have landed top New York agents, national book awards, and deals with some of the most prestigious publishing houses in the business. Jenny herself is the author of 9 books in 3 genres. She taught for 13 years in the UCLA Extension Writers Program, is an instructor at creativelive.com, and speaks on podcasts and at writing conferences all across the U.S. And like I mentioned at the top of the episode, one of those books is about how to read books all day and get paid for it. That's the title, in fact. So I'm happy Jenny could join me for this conversation about that and so much more. Stay tuned after the interview for updates on what you can expect next from the RightsCast Network, and thanks, as always, for listening. Thank you so much, Jenny Nash, for joining me for episode 80 of the R.R. Campbell RightsCast here on the RightsCast Network.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited to have you on. This is a topic that many listeners have reached out to me about over the years to learn more about because, of course, who doesn't want to read books all day and get paid for it? So why don't we start there then? What is it that we mean when we say one can read books all day and get paid for it?
That's the title that I put on my book about book coaching. And the reason that I chose that title is I've been in the business of book coaching and of training book coaches for about 10 years now. And the number one thing people say to me when they want to get into it or when they realize what it is that they want to have work that lets them be in story all day, that lets them be in the world of books and ideas and words, which is, if they're a writer or an editor, is the place where they want to be. And it's often people who are starting a side gig from another career or maybe switching their entire careers altogether. And the idea of doing the thing they love, which is working with stories and words and ideas, is what they want. So that's where that title comes from.
Very good. And I'm curious to know, too, specifically about this tag of being a book coach, right? Because there are folks who will say, well, I'm an editor, or they will say, like I do, I just use the term writing coach. I've seen writer coach out there. What is it about the term book coach that really has called to you in particular?
It's a great question. Well, first of all, I guess I should just define what I believe it means. And what a book coach is somebody who is with a writer throughout the creative process of producing a book. And by producing, I mean actually writing. I stay wholly on the side of developing the book and writing the book, not actually producing in terms of making a physical object or publishing it. So it's somebody who's with the writer all the way through that process. And it's specifically about book writing. There's a lot of other kinds of writing. There's blog writers, there's short story writers, there's poetry writers, there's people who want to write because they want to express themselves or they want to learn about the craft. But I specifically am helping people who want to write books that get read.
And that all sounds like a really great way to sort of clarify the difference that folks might see. I know that if you're a listener to this program and you want to learn more about the difference between, say, a developmental editor and a proofreader or a line editor, what have you, there are plenty of resources out there online, because I do think that today, Jenny, with what it is you do, it'd be great to focus on the book coaching specifically. And aside from this sort of definitional conversation that we've had thus far, I also want to know, Jenny, what was your personal journey like to becoming a book coach? How did that all kind of come together for you?
It was somewhat accidental, actually. I was teaching in the UCLA Writers Program, which is one of the largest adult-focused writing education programs in the country. And I had been teaching there for a number of years and had developed a very strategic approach to the creative process. And for a lot of people, a lot of writers or creative people, those two things don't go together, strategy and writing. So much of the way writing is typically taught is about the creativity part only, you know, the tapping into what you feel and what you want to say and what you believe. And that's all great and good. And we need that. But I was always focused on, okay, but what if you actually want to be read? What if you want to not just be published, but you want to be read? What is the strategy or the mindset that you have to take to get there? And it's different. It's a different thing. And I naturally was gravitating toward that. I happened to be teaching in memoir. That was where most of my classes were. And with memoir in particular, there's a vast difference between I just want to tell my story because it's going to make me understand myself better or process better what happened to me. And I want to write my story because I think other people will get something out of it. And I think other people will benefit from it. Those are two very different things. And the difference between those two approaches to memoir is strategy. It's looking at what is your intention for this book? What is your audience for this book? What is the market for this book? How is this book going to perform once it's in the marketplace? So all of my teaching was focused on that. And what happened was one of my colleagues approached me and asked if I would coach her in writing a nonfiction book about writing. And I had never done that before and didn't know what it would look like, but I said yes. And I took the strategies I had been developing and formulated them into a process or a plan for her and worked with her from what I call zero. She had nothing all the way until she landed a 2-book deal with an imprint at Random House. And that writer was Lisa Cron. And the 2 books were Wired for Story and Story Genius, which had become much beloved in the writing world. So I was able to prove my process. And then from there, it just kind of took off. And I realized that I liked coaching better than I actually liked being a writer my own self or being a teacher.
That's really an incredible story and is one that makes for quite the coincidence, in fact, because I recently finished reading Lisa's Wired for Story and have, as of maybe 15 minutes prior to recording, reached out to her to see if she would like to join me for a future episode. So I had no idea, Jenny, that that was the case. But even that aside, your story really resonates with me, because in my journey to becoming a resource for the community and working in my capacity as a writing coach, I had a similar thing occur where I was part of a critique group in downtown Madison. I'd been attending it for 4, 5, 6 years at the time, whatever the case might have been. And after a particular critique group session one day, a member from the group asked me if I had ever considered doing one-on-one work with authors. And I was a little confused by the question. I didn't quite know what it is that they meant by that. But as they went on to clarify and I went on to understand, what they were getting at was, hey, you could work with someone one-on-one back and forth in a sort of dynamic way to help shape their book, because this particular person thought, hey, I had some things that were noteworthy or interesting to say about their work and they appreciated it. So we have some commonalities here, and I wonder if there are listeners out there who are finding themselves in a similar position. Maybe they've worked with beta readers in the past or as a beta reader before, and they've been praised for having some really insightful feedback, and they're curious now, well, okay, maybe I want to be a book coach. But Jenny, what does one need to consider when deciding whether to become a book coach?
Well, it's a great question. And I think the first thing to think about is what your story points to, as well as mine, which is that writing a book involves far more steps and far more skills than I think most people realize. And writing a book, there's so many things you have to master along the way. And we tend to think about writing as this thing that you should just somehow know how to do, writing a book, that you should somehow, because you've been a reader all your life, or maybe you've been a writer in other capacities, maybe you worked at the newspaper, in college, or you write in your job, or you've always written for yourself, or whatever it might be, we tend to think, well, because I've done all those things, I should know how to write a book. And it's not true. There's a lot of things that you have to learn. There's a lot of things you have to master. It's a large, complex intellectual undertaking to write a book that other people want to read. And once writers realize that, and they realize that they're not going to learn all the things they need to learn in a 10-week writing class or a 4-day writing workshop or from a series of videos or books, once they realize that, then the question is, how do I learn all these things that I need to master? And what this goes to is this whole myth that, writing should be a lightning strike from God and you should just sort of be able to do it. And there are some what I call native geniuses who are able to write that way. And we hold those people up as the model for how it should be. But for the vast majority of people, they have to go work hard to learn all the steps and to bring them all together and to manage that project. So if we understand that that's really what writing is for most people who are going to accomplish it, you can certainly learn all that on your own. Lots of people have. In my writing life, I did that. I struggled along. I figured it out. I stumbled my way. It's absolutely possible. But for somebody who wants to be coached or led or guided through that process, those are the people who are going to turn to a coach and to say, hey, somebody else may have figured all these things out. I don't have to figure them out on my own. I'm going to just tap into their expertise. That's then what a book coach is going to do. So before I launch into then what you need to do the coaching, do you have any response to that or questions about that?
Well, I was going to kind of tie it right into that as a follow-up question, in fact, because there is so much to know. And that makes me wonder, let's say you're a writer now, but you're interested in becoming a book coach. What are some good resources that one can turn to start developing the expertise required to enter into that field?
Well, I'll answer that question by talking about what I believe a good book coach needs to know and to master. So the first thing is going to be that they have a basic editorial understanding, what I would call the mechanical editing understanding. And a lot of people have that skill, and it's also a skill that's relatively easy to develop. So that would be, do you know how sentences are put together? Can you break one apart when it's not working and say why? Can you line edit a piece of prose so that it is correct and smooth and readable? So that's the baseline thing, is that ability to do mechanical edits. What I believe a good book coach needs on top of that would be what I call an understanding of narrative design. So narrative design is the more meta understanding of the way that books work. How do they capture a reader's attention? How do they move in flow? What is their shape and structure? Can you step back and look at a book length narrative and see what's working and what's not? Why is the middle sagging? Why is the end not paying off? if we're talking about nonfiction, is that argument holding all the way through. Those big picture ideas about how narrative captures a reader's attention and mind, those are the things you have to master second. And in order to learn that, there's not a lot of places you can actually go to learn that. If we look at the industry, becoming an agent or becoming an editor at a publishing house is a apprentice situation. You apprentice yourself to somebody who knows how to do that work. And that's how you typically learn how to do that work. So making that leap from mechanical edits to understanding narrative design is critical. And I do think being mentored is the best way to do that. The third thing that I believe a good book coach needs is an understanding of the way books are bought and sold. So the marketplace and our publishing universe is changing so fast. There's so much movement. It's just a very dynamic environment right now. So somebody who's coaching other people and how to write a book really needs to have an understanding of, I mean, you can't master all parts of it. It's a large industry. There's a lot of pieces to it. There's a lot going on, but you have to be able to understand it and look at it and, you know, guide or advise your writers to make the best decisions for their publishing path. So you've got to have some sort of understanding of that. And where you can get that sort of information or understanding is just through, you know, you asked about newsletters or resources. There's so many great newsletters about the publishing industry to follow. Some of my favorite, one of my favorites is called Shelf Awareness. And Shelf Awareness is actually a newsletter for the book selling trade. They have a reader version and a pro version. And the pro version is for booksellers, so for bookstore owners. But it's just a fantastic way to get a sense of how books are actually being sold at the ground level, you know? And that's one of my favorite resources. And I also really like Jane Friedman's Hot Sheet, which is Jane Friedman is, of course, a guru in the publishing universe. And she has a newsletter, but she also publishes this hot sheet, which you subscribe to. And it's about trends. It's about consolidations and business level things in the book publishing industry. You can really get a sense of what's going on. And then I also recommend Publishers Weekly, which is where all the new book deals are being announced. And if an editor is moving from one house to another, it's often announced there. Sometimes new agents are announced there. So that's a good way to get a kind of day-to-day what's happening in the universe. And that's just a small sampling of resources that I recommend for learning about the business itself.
And that's all really great to learn about the broader business, the broader marketplace. But why don't we turn back, if we could, for just a minute and revisit this idea of what it is we might want to consider when deciding whether to become a book coach. But let's analyze that now maybe from the brass tacks business perspective. Because if we're going to treat it like a business, surely there are some business decisions we need to be considering. Am I right?
Absolutely. I want to just finish quickly. I'll do it fast. I started out with three things that a good book coach would need, which is mechanical editing, the ability to understand narrative design, the ability to understand the publishing universe. And there's two more. They're fast. One of them is project management, the ability to manage a project over time and manage people over time. Because even if you're in a one-on-one relationship, you've got to be able to do that. So somebody who is interested in that, who's good at that, who has that. And then the fifth thing would be the ability to manage actual writers. And writers are unique creatures. They have a lot of doubts. They have a lot of emotion. They have a lot of fear. And the ability to manage that is really what distinguishes a good book coach from an editor, let's say. Because an editor is usually coming in and doing an edit in a one-off sort of way. And they're not dealing with that writer over time through the ups and downs of the creative process. So those five things are the things, if somebody is interested in book coaching, that they're going to want to think about mastering. And, you know, you've alluded to this several times, and I think it's really true. There are a lot of people it sounds like you were one of them, who are actually already doing a lot of this work, and they're doing it for their friends or in critique groups, and they're doing it for free. So that leads us to the idea of how can we make this into an actual job and make money at it, which is what you asked me to go to next.
So let's make it happen. We're ready now.
So the nuts and bolts of running a successful book coaching business have to do with mastering how you're going to serve them, and what you're going to charge. And these are the fundamental basics of running a business. But what I found is that a lot of people in the creative universe, so writers and editors and people like that, have not actually been taught these things. They're very prevalent in the entrepreneurial world, in the startup world. And that's where I actually learned all of these principles, was studying and apprenticing myself to people who were running businesses. So totally outside of the world of writing itself, and marrying these two things together, how to guide or coach or oversee writers, and then marrying them with the principles of how to run a small business and how to be an entrepreneur is where I came up with my methods and processes. And so some of the key things for someone to understand if they're going to be a book coach is this idea of who are you going to serve? And in the world of small business and startups and side gigs and all of it, the absolute key principle is to really narrow your audience and who you're going to serve and how you're going to serve them. And we think that this is easy. We think we know how to do that. But in my coaching of book coaches, it's the number one thing people have to work on. Because you might say, well, I'm going to work on fiction. Well, that's way too broad, right? So right. Then it's like, okay, let's go down to a genre. I'm going to work on speculative fiction, let's say. It's like, okay, that's still way too broad, because within the realm of someone writing speculative fiction, are you helping somebody start a book? Are you helping them finish a book? Are you helping them revise a book? Are you helping them pitch the book? Are you helping them, you know, rescue or save a book? Like, where in the process are you helping them? And being able to really define that and narrow it down and get super specific is what is going to allow you to then attract those people. And the principle of solving someone's problem. And so in order to solve someone's problem, that's when somebody's going to give you money, it's because you're going to solve a problem for them. And this is true in all business and in all things that we buy. When you're trading money, you want a solution. You want value for that money that you're trading. So the book coach has to figure out, what am I actually solving for this problem? And really narrowing down and identifying that thing. And it's way harder than it seems.
Rightscast people, you know what's going on. This episode is brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing. Dandelion Web Marketing helps writers like you build a thriving author platform through strategic web marketing. So if you're not sure if you're on the right track with your author website, for example, well, you can get an author website audit and find out. Listeners of the Rightscast Network right now can receive half off one of these audits, which will look at your site's content, security, design, search engine optimization, and more. You'll also get some insight on what you might do to better connect with your audience, which sounds like a pretty good deal to me. So to learn the strengths and weaknesses of your current website and save 50%, you can visit dandelionwebmarketing.com/rightscast to learn more. That's dandelionwebmarketing.com/rightscast. I will say that it is way harder than it seems, because Jenny, after having read your book earlier this year, I actually ran this through this exercise myself, not only this one, but some of the others that you propose. And let me tell you, I had to spend a long time thinking about who it was that I have historically served and whether or not I felt that I was doing the best that I could by them and by myself, and then decide, okay, from all of that, what did I enjoy most? And then start to even whittle that down further to arrive at a new portal on my website that specifically lets people know, okay, these are the folks that I am looking to serve. And it feels a little narrow, but it also makes me feel now know that every time I'm working with a new client, I'm going to feel really great about this because I know exactly where in the process I'm going to be helping them. I know exactly more or less the genre in which they're writing or that they believe they want to write. And it's been really reassuring for me. So I know it's really hard, listeners. It's probably sounding, you know, kind of daunting. And when you sit down to do it, it gets even harder, but it's worth it on the far end, I would say anyway, at least in my experience.
Absolutely. And it gets at this idea that is a very difficult idea for a lot of people who are writers, who are starting out as writers. We tend to undervalue writing in our culture. We don't pay our writers very well unless they're Michelle Obama or Stephen King. You know, there's so many places where your writing is, people want to trade it for exposure. That's, you know, the big thing with the internet and blogging and guest posting and all that. And there, in general, the work of writers is not very valued. And so it's pretty easy for someone to not value the idea of helping a writer. And I work with so many book coaches who they really are coming to this work from a place of, it's a very heart-centered place. They want to help. And they are drawn to this work. It does feel to me in many ways like a helping profession, that you want to help somebody. And these writers are often in a lot of pain. They're frustrated. They're desperate. They don't understand why they can't get published, or they can't land an agent, or they can't get a book deal, or whatever the thing is. And if you're solving that pain, you're helping them. You're adding value to them. So the work that we have to do on the business side is making sure that that book coach is valuing their own time and their own sense of what they're adding. And that's a huge hurdle for a lot of people, and especially for a lot of women, I've found. And this idea that you're worth something, and that you're worth quite a lot, and that this work you're doing, you know, what people will often say is, well, I can't be a book coach because I don't have an agent and I haven't written a best-selling book, so therefore I can't help somebody do this work. And what they're saying is that the only outcome somebody is interested in paying for is a best-selling book. And that whole mindset, I think, is so wrong, because a lot of writers, deep down, they know that it takes a long time and a lot of luck to get to the place where they're going to make money with their writing. And so what you're selling as a book coach is not necessarily a tangible outcome. You can't promise somebody that they're going to get those big prizes. So it's the idea of, okay, then what can you promise them? And how can you make that tangible and real so that you are able to put a price on it? And so that's the work that I do when I'm working with coaches, is really working on that mindset and that understanding and being able to define, what are you selling?
And it's so important to know that. And it seems like, again, this is another question that comes up. Well, it feels like the answer is simple until you are in a position to be developing, maintaining, sustaining relationships with writers and seeing that, well, you're not selling them their own manuscript. They're writing their own manuscript. It really is, in my experience anyway, about these relationships and bringing that joy back to writing for the writers who may be struggling with their work right now, or who are feeling frustrated, even if it's just by something as simple as a single scene. So knowing that about ourselves and knowing that about our business really goes a long way into ensuring that we're helping the writers that we work with. And I think to this point in our conversation, Jenny, we've focused a lot on this feeling of we're helping writers in one-on-one coaching situations. Maybe we're helping them digitally at a distance, or maybe it's someone that we meet with in our communities. But these aren't the only forms that book coaching can take. Am I right? Are there other ways that we can partake in being a book coach that aren't so one-on-one centric?
Oh, absolutely. So, I mean, the vast majority of, well, I was going to say that's not true. 100% of my clients are not people that I ever meet in person. So that's one thing to know. I do all of my work virtually, and most of the book coaches that I train are in that same position. So it's the idea of that you're drawing clientele really from all over the world. So that's one thing to understand for sure. And the way that I do my work is with, you know, the clients, the writers turn in words on the page, and I work with the words on the page. I'm an editor. I do the edits and I turn the work back to them. But there's always the important part of coaching is there's always then a connection either by phone or by video, depending on what the situation demands or the person prefers, where we're then talking about that feedback, talking about their issues with the feedback or their questions, or they're making sure they understand, or perhaps why are they doing the same thing over and over again? Why are they making the same mistake over and over again? And trying to get them to see their own work more clearly, to build those skills, to build their confidence, trying to, you know, at the end of the day, what it really is about is helping the writer raise their voice and own their voice and come into their authority as a writer. And that's the thing at the end of the day that we're really selling them is I can promise somebody that. I can't promise that they're going to write a bestseller or they're going to make a ton of money on their book, but I can promise that I can help them come into their own voice and their own power. And when we think of that, depending on what tiny slice you're working on with, you know, we talked about before what part of the process you're helping them with, that's how we can really add value to them. And so those people can be anywhere in the whole world. So that's a part of your question. And then the other part of your question, I think, was how to do this in a larger scale than one-on-one. And, you know, it's really interesting. This is a thing that I'm struggling with a lot in my own business. So my own business, meaning I'm a book coach, my own self, as you've heard, but I also run a business called Author Accelerator, where I'm working with writers and coaches in a broader scale and training and teaching people in a broader scale. So this idea of, can you do this work in a group setting? How big a group? You know, how long does it take? You know, all of those questions are questions that I'm wrestling with all the time. And it goes back to the story I told at the very start of our conversation when I was a teacher in the writing program at UCLA. And I just have really come to believe, and the longer I do this, the deeper my belief is that the best way to learn how to write is with one-on-one help. And I keep wanting to believe otherwise, and I keep trying otherwise, and I keep wanting it to be that way. And I keep running up against the fact that it's just such a personal thing, your writing and voice. And the best way to get better at that is to have somebody else in it with you in a line by line, you know, moment by moment understanding. And it's, you know, the most inefficient thing you could possibly do is try to help somebody one-on-one. But I really just have come to believe that.
I have slowly started to stumble my own way into a similar realization as of late, in fact, because as listeners to this show know, back in episode 77 with Laurie Buchanan, I happened to make this accidental, in some ways, announcement that I was going to be spinning the RightsCast Network off into this new venture, RightsCast Academy, with a lot of video modules and writing exercise and really working on brass tacks sort of stuff. And I went through all of the steps of filming all of these classes. I had the green screen. I edited everything up. I built the infrastructure on my website. And then, listeners, you didn't hear anything else about it since that episode debuted, even though I said it would be ready to go. And this is why. Because I think, Jenny, I'm realizing that it is incredibly satisfying to work with people one-on-one. And I have started to stumble into this concern that the more I try to develop material that could be used in, say, an online workshop, the more I find that I am being driven to try to find ways to present this material that it creates this impression that there is a one size fits all solution for particular problems in writing or particular challenges with one's manuscript. And I think, as you and I both know, there are certainly many tools that we can go back to and see if they work here and there, but there really isn't just a single tool that is going to solve every single problem every time that it comes up. So I have actually started to shy away from pursuing RightsCast Academy myself. I'm sorry, listeners, if you were looking forward to that, but it is reassuring to hear, Jenny, that I'm not alone in having started to suspect that, though yes, it is not the world's most efficient system, it is perhaps the world's most rewarding system when you're in a position to help people one-on-one.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what you've touched on is that there are a lot of basic principles about writing that we can learn from books or videos or courses or conferences or workshops. There's no doubt there, you know, there's so many skills that you have to master. So you can learn those principles. You can get to a theoretical understanding of some of these ideas. But when it gets down to actually doing it, you're right. There, every book, the reason we love books, the reason readers, you know, hold books in such high esteem and love is because they are so unique to themselves. They're so personal. And when you are reading a book that just holds you in its spell, you feel as if you're in relationship with that writer. You feel as if you know them. I had a really interesting experience recently. I moved to a new town, a smallish town, and there's a lot of writers that come through and do presentations in this town. So I've been going to a lot of writer events, and they're not the normal bookstore writer events. They're big theater writer events. So you get big writers. So we had Tara Westover, the author of the memoir Educated, came through, and Bill Bryson. This week I went to hear Bill Bryson, who has a new book out. And it was just so interesting going to these big theater events with all these people who love these writers, and that, you know, each one of us thinks that somehow, you know, Bill Bryson spoke to us in A Walk in the Woods. And, you know, it was like we had such an intimate experience with that book. You know, that book makes you laugh. It makes you think. And you think, you know, he's my friend in a way. And then you go to this theater and he's standing up there and he's just a guy. And, you know, it's kind of this awkward experience that I've noticed, that he's a guy who writes books, but guess what? He's not actually that great on stage, right? Like, it was kind of a letdown. I mean, he's hysterically funny and he's very kind and, you know, generous and all that, but he's just a guy standing there who actually is much better when you read him than when you go to a big theater and listen to him with all these other people who had this experience with his book. It's a very strange thing. And it just, for me, it reinforces what a book is. It's this very intimate one-on-one experience. And we don't, reading in groups is not really a thing. I mean, like book groups, yeah, you can read the book and go talk about the book, but actually reading the book is a thing you do one-on-one. And I think writing is really very much the same. And you have to, you know, a metaphor would be gardening. So you could learn all about where to plant which plants and what order to plant them in so that they bloom or produce effectively, and that these plants like shade and these plants like sun. Like, you can learn those rules and those ideas and those principles. But when you go to plant a garden and you put, you know, a certain plant in a certain place that you think it's going to work and it doesn't work there, you've got to figure that out and move the plant or get a different plant for that spot, or understand that yes, the book or the lesson is that plant likes shade or sun, or this much shade or this much sun and this much water. And you've got to figure it out in your own plot of land. And it's the same with writing. You've got to figure out what you're trying to say in your particular book and structure and idea. And I really do think the best way to do that is having one person in there with you trying to figure it out.
And I really like that metaphor. I appreciate it a great deal, because it gets at this idea that though writing itself is not necessarily scientific, there is, to some extent, and experimentation that we have to do when we are working on our own manuscripts to see what works. And there's also sometimes an experimentation that we might have to encourage our clients to take on when we're working in our capacity as a book coach. And as it turns out, once in a while, you don't know what's going to work until you've moved that plant to a new plot, or you've got some new soil there, or like you say, you move it from the shade into the sun, or vice versa. And it's really reassuring to hear that, because I think, again, it ties back into this idea that if we come to the page, whether as a writer or as a book coach, with the expectation that, well, we know we've got our old reliable, we'll just keep applying this single tool. Well, sure, when it comes down to things like understanding sentence mechanics, we've got tools like that at our disposal. But when we're talking about crafting a narrative and we're getting really deep into how it is our plot is functioning alongside character development, et cetera, well, we could get a little frustrated. But if we know that that experimentation is there for us and that's sometimes just what it takes, I think that having that in mind can be, to some extent, reassuring anyway. What time is it? It's Jade Ring time. That's right. The Wisconsin Writers Association's Jade Ring contest is here, and the time has come for you to submit your fiction, your nonfiction, and your poetry to their 72nd annual event. When you submit, you'll have the opportunity to see your work published in Wisconsin People and Ideas magazine, as well as Creative Wisconsin Literary Journal, assuming you are selected as a winner, of course. And beyond that publication, you can win some great cash prizes and the coveted Jade Ring itself. So to learn more, head to wiwrite.org/contests and submit your work today. And act fast. The submission window isn't open forever, folks. So if you want to get in on the 72nd annual contest, it's wiwrite.org/contests.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've learned, I have a client, I always call her my favorite client, which is a little bit like calling a child your favorite child. But she is, for the following reason. I've been working with her for about 3 years now, and she is a woman who retired from a very prominent career on Capitol Hill. And in her retirement, she had two goals. One was to learn how to play the cello, which I could not help her with to save my life. And the other was to learn how to write a novel. And when she came to me, I tried to send her away, because circling back to the start of our conversation, I don't work with beginning writers. That's not a thing that I feel where I can add value. And, you know, she needed to learn everything. And so I said, I'm not the coach for you. Well, she begged and begged and begged and begged, and she convinced me that she said, I will be your best client. And she had all these arguments. She's a lawyer, so she kind of lawyered me. So I agreed to work with her. And it has been such an incredible delight for me, because over these 3 years, she's written two novels. The first novel that I worked with her on was good, but it was not good enough. And when I say that I've learned so much from her, she just very, it was not without emotion, but she very clearly saw what it was not going to be, and put it aside, and then said, okay, let's start the next one and do better. And so the thing that she taught me was this incredible power of being patient. And being patient in the learning. And so then she worked on the next novel, and the first draft was so much better than the first novel, but still not good enough. And so then we set about doing a revision, and really her revision was a whole new approach to the novel. It was really as if she wrote a whole new book. So this woman is just, she wants to get it right. And she does not have her eye on a prize. She does not have some notion of how fast it should take, or why is this taking it so long. Her entire intention is to learn. And so it's been just an incredible experience for me, because it's as if I get to do exactly what it takes. And most people are not willing they don't have the time, they don't have the money, they don't have the capacity of spirit. You know, there's a lot of reasons why this woman is in a privileged place, but she's doing exactly what I believe has to be done to write a great book. And she's now working on the third revision of this second book. And when I read her pages now, I mean, honestly, my jaw just drops. It's so good. And I find myself reading it, even though I know precisely what's going to happen and exactly how this writer has gotten here. I know everything about the story and these characters and the situation and these people, but I'm still reading it as if, you know, holding my breath as if what's going to happen next, you know, as a reader might, because she's figured out how to do it. She's finally gotten to where she could do it. And, you know, so just when I say I've learned so much from her, that's what I try to bring now to all my other clients, even if they don't have the same resources to bring to the work. I try to bring that idea of, we're going to figure this out. It's going to take time. It's going to be hard. I'm going to be with you in it. We'll get there. You might have to throw some things out. You might have to, you know, prune the tree or dig the tree out, or like you say, move the tree into the sunshine or whatever. But if you're willing to do that and you're willing to let me be in that with you, we can get there.
And in the same way that we have to be patient with our own writing, or when we are working with a client and we're encouraging them to be patient in our work as a book coach, particularly if we are just getting started, I find that patience pays off when it comes to finding clients, because I have seen around the Twitter sphere some folks who are dipping their toes in the waters of becoming a book coach, and they'll send these tweets out and it says, hello, yes, just a reminder, I'm still offering these editing services. If you're interested, please let me know. And sadly, more often than not, I see a lot of times there isn't a ton of interaction on things like these tweets. So if we could turn back to sort of the business side of this, Jenny, what are some good things that we can start considering when it comes to marketing a book coaching business?
It's a really good idea to talk about that. And it's a thing that I think about a lot. And I have been helping a lot of people with this step. And we have a really wonderful reality, which is that in my book coach training program, the students are required to do a practicum. So they're required on three different occasions to actually work with clients in the class. So they have to go get those clients. They have to work with those clients. They have to turn their work in for review. So in other words, they have to record their call with the client. They have to show us their editing with the client, so that they're from the very beginning in the course, they're actually doing the client work. And what we found in this process is this notion of, well, where do I get these practice clients, is the most daunting. And it goes to exactly this question of, how do I put myself out there? How do I let people know I'm doing this? And we have some very specific step-by-step things that we walk them through doing. And, you know, it sounds reductive and sort of simplistic, but the first steps are what we talked about earlier. First of all, know exactly who you're helping. I mean, if I see a tweet and it's, I've got these editing things and I'm giving away a manuscript edit, or I'm giving away a query edit, or, you know, that sort of thing, why would I click on that? Whereas if I saw something that said, you know, back to that speculative fiction example, if I see something that says, I am taking a book coach training course, I'm looking for three writers of speculative fiction, I would like to work with women, I would like to work with people who are having trouble breaking into the market, and I would like to work with you on your query, well, all of a sudden, they're going to get people responding, because it's so specific, it's so particular, it's identified a problem, it's identified a way you can help. And we're finding that those, when people make those kinds of requests, they're flooded with people that want to work with them. It's being able to identify what you're doing and who you're working with. And most people are graduating from our certification program with paying clients because of that. And then once they work with the practice client, those clients typically will say, can I keep working with you? And then from there, building a business from there has very much to do with word of mouth. The writing community is small. People need help. They'll tell their friends. We have step-by-step processes where you can specifically ask for referrals, and that's one way to build it. And I mean, I could talk about this for days, right?
I know. There's a huge section of it in your book as well. So listeners, please grab a copy of Read Books All Day and Get Paid for It. And you can read, oh, what section is it here? I just had it. Part 5 of the book is all about marketing.
Yeah. And it's taking the principles from the startup world and offering something small that's easy to say yes to, that is easy to dazzle the client. You know, you want to help them. So do something that can actually help them. And you have to know what that means, what help that they need. You know, somebody looking for a manuscript edit has a vast number of different things that they might need in that manuscript, and trying to really narrow down what you can do and how you can help them is the way. And I know all of the book coaches that I know that have waiting lists and are making a very good living at this work are these are the things that they're doing. And you know, at this point in my career, for example, I don't advertise, I don't look for work, I don't do anything other than do good work for my clients. And you know, inevitably they send 5 people my way, you know, after working with me. And that's what a healthy, good business, that's the place you want to get to. And you certainly can't start there, but there are steps that you can take to work your way to that.
It really does sound like when it comes to marketing, we should use as the centerpiece of our marketing efforts the vision and the mission statement that we create for ourselves as book coaches way back when we're first starting to think about getting into it. Who do we want to serve? How are we going to serve them? And if our marketing really keeps that in focus, even if we're in the early stages of our time as a book coach, it sounds like that'll serve us really well. And that's all fine and good. But let's say, Jenny, we've got clients now, right? Or we have some people who might be interested in working with us, but we aren't sure how to set our prices. You made a really great point earlier about how it's important we value our own time, especially once and should we become successful, we have waiting lists, et cetera. We want to make sure that we're making sure that we're taking care of ourselves also. So how, Jenny, is it that we can approach this idea of setting prices as a book coach?
Oh, this is my favorite topic, and I tend to get up on a soapbox a little bit about it.
Please, I'm pulling out a soapbox for you right now. I've placed it in front of you, and you are free to soapbox.
And it goes to some of the things we touched on before, which is people are so quick to say, "Oh, writers won't pay because writers don't make money themselves. Writers are, you know, poor, starving artists who can't afford anything. Therefore, I can't charge anything." So the first thing we have to do is eradicate that mindset. And there are absolutely writers who will pay. We did a small survey among our Author Accelerator writers where we asked them how much they spend a year on their writing. And it was quite shocking, the number of writers who spend more than $10,000 a year on their writing. And when you add up going to a conference, going to a workshop, taking a class, buying a course, buying the books, you know, all the things that one can spend their money on, and many of them, of those that spent more than $10,000, a large percentage actually spent quite a lot more than $10,000. So writers are spending money on their writing. There is no question about that. So the first thing is to know that. And then the second thing is to really figure out what your value is and not put an arbitrary price on your value based on what you think the writer is going to pay. And when I say I get up on a soapbox, the vast majority of people that I train have in their mind an hourly rate or similarly a per page rate on editing that is pretty low. And those ways of looking at pricing, I think, are really damaging to the coach and ultimately really to the writer. The race to the bottom in terms of pricing that some of the freelance service, what do you call those places? I don't even know how to collectively talk about them, but the roundup, you know, freelance places like Upwork, for example, where service providers bid on jobs and it's a race to the bottom on who can provide the lowest price. I mean, first of all, I say, just don't touch those with the 10-foot pole, get out of them completely. And because that race to the bottom is antithetical to what we're trying to do, which is to actually help a writer. And I see so many bad edits and damage done by low priced work that they then come to us trying to fix it. And it just breaks my heart that these writers are going to these low priced services. And you know, the people that are giving those low priced services, they just don't know any better. It's not that I don't think they're setting out to do harm, but if you're only charging a tiny bit, you're going to have to go fast and you're only going to be able to do the top level. You know, like I'll see somebody come in with a full manuscript edit that they've paid for from a low priced editor. And, you know, the editors just touched on what I would call like grammatical, mechanical edits on this book. And, you know, I take one look at it and it's like, well, that's all well and good, but this book is starting in the wrong place. It's 200 words too long, you know, like all those big picture things that they have not touched on because the low priced editing didn't give enough time for that. So it's getting out of that mentality. And then you can start by looking at an hourly rate. What would you like to make by hour? What would you like to make as a book coach in general? What kind of offerings can you give to people that have enough value? You can put a higher price on them. And the quick example that I can give for this is somebody comes to a book coach wanting work on a query letter. That's a very typical thing. So the writer's ready to go pitch agents. Maybe they're doing a Twitter contest or something and they want help on making sure that their query is in good shape. So they come to the book coach, and if all you're doing is literally editing the query letter, that doesn't take very long. It takes longer than most people think because there's a lot of things to think about. And when I do a query letter, I want to go out and look at the comp titles on Amazon and I want to, you know, really think about the big picture. And, you know, so it takes longer than most writers think it's going to take, but still it's kind of a small task to edit a query. So let's just put a price on that. Let's say you're taking an hour. That's a very small estimation to edit this query. And let's say as a book coach, you're going to say, I want to make $100 an hour, so I'm going to charge $100 to edit this query. And you do that work and you give it back. I don't think you're actually serving the writer with what they really need, because what they really need when they are coming to you for a query is they need to have a strategy for pitching. They need to know who they're pitching. They need to know why they're pitching those agents. They need to know where their book fits in the marketplace. They need to know the competition and the comp titles. They need to have an incredible sales tool in their query letter. They need their first pages of their manuscript to be clear and crisp and flawless. They need the confidence to know that they're ready to pitch, to feel good about pitching, understand what's going to happen if they get rejected, to understand what happens if they get an offer of representation. Like, I've just ticked off 12 things besides just the query that they need. So when I would never take a job that's just editing a query letter, because you're missing those 10 things. So instead of $100, I actually charge $3,500 to help somebody at that stage of the process. And what I'm giving them, the value that I'm giving them, is way exceeds editing the query letter. So if somebody came to me and said, "Will you just edit this query letter?" I would say, "No, I don't do that." And I don't do that because it's missing this entire thing about what you really need. And so putting that value on it, looking at really, that's what I mean by looking at what does that writer really need? How can I really serve them? What is really the point of this query? What is really the pain that they're experiencing? You know, there's so much panic around queries. Let me work on the panic. Let me get all the pieces in place so that they don't have to panic and that we have this strategic way of approaching it. So all of a sudden, instead of a $100 job, I have a $3,500 job. And also I have really, really happy clients, because whether or not they get an agent, they feel supported and they feel that they've learned tools and they've learned skills and they understand the process and they understand perhaps why they were rejected, or they understand what to do in all the situations. So see, I told you I was going to get up on my soapbox. Now a new book coach is not going to be able to just swoop in and say, "I'm charging $3,500 for this." I have a lot of success behind me. I have a lot of evidence that I'm good at this. I have a lot of experience that I'm able to put that kind of a price tag on that kind of a project. And you can work up to charging higher prices, but it's all about understanding the actual value you're providing and not just, oh, I'm going to make $100 an hour.
Yeah, it really seems like specifically in the case of this query example that you have given, it's about taking a more holistic approach. And again, having the writer be the focus and not just this single page query letter, because there are so many things that need to be considered, yes, on a single page of a query letter, but also on a single page of a manuscript. In an earlier example, you even mentioned, sure, you will work with someone who's already worked with an editor, and it looks like a lot of time was spent on grammar and sentence structure, but that's just one small little dimension of what's happening on a single page. And so putting ourselves in a position to take this holistic approach and then valuing for ourselves and for our clients what that looks like financially is a really important step in all of this. So I'm really glad that you brought that up. And Jenny, we are running up against our hour here in the episode, and I know that there is so much more to say. Listeners, I've mentioned the name of Jenny's book a couple of times here. It is Read Books All Day and Get Paid for It. But Jenny, beyond grabbing a copy of that book, I know that you have this Author Accelerator program. It is now a book coach facing interface, or there is a component to that as well. So if you would spend a minute maybe letting listeners know what Author Accelerator is and how they can get involved with it if they would like to do so.
Definitely. So Author Accelerator is the company that I started to train book coaches. And we also match writers with those book coaches who we train. And the matching process for writers is free. So if you're interested in working with one of our book coaches, you can come to authoraccelerator.com. And we ask a series of very hard questions. And they're about your publishing goal, where you are in the process, what kind of a coach you're looking for, what kind of an outcome you're looking for, what you've done before, where you've struggled before. We take all of that in, and we have an actual human person whose job it is to match writers with the coaches. And her job is to know the coaches well, to know the topics they like to coach, the types of problems they like to solve, the types of writers that they're best working with, and they will match writers with those coaches. So again, that service is free for writers, and we love doing the matching. It's really fun. And then we have extensive training programs for coaches, including an advanced book coach training course that teaches all the principles of how to be a coach. We're just about to launch a nonfiction version of that. The first one was fiction, and the second one we're bringing online is nonfiction. And it took me a very long time to get this one into place. Nonfiction book proposals are my particular superpower, and there's so much that goes into them. And this class is a bit of a beast, but it's going to be really good. We also have a business of book coaching course and mastermind that's built on the book Read Books All Day and Get Paid for It. So we actually walk you through the steps that you need to define who you're going to serve, what your pricing and packages are going to be, and how you're going to market yourself. So we have lots of services for people who are interested in becoming book coaches. And if somebody goes to authoraccelerator.com, they can find some free steps, a mini course. We have a free mini course that is a good place to start to see if this might be right for you. And probably by the time this podcast launches, we actually are launching a brand new website. That's bookcoaches.com. It's just the URL, bookcoaches.com, where most of the coaching information is going to live and migrate over to. You can get to it by authoraccelerator.com, but if people are intrigued to go look at that new URL, they can check that out.
Well, very good. A lot of fantastic resources there, a lot of great resources in your book, and I hope as well, listeners, over the course of this conversation. I'm very grateful, Jenny, that you could join me for this episode of the R.R. Campbell Writescast here on the Writescast Network. So thanks again.
Thanks for having me.
And so concludes my conversation with Jenny Nash of Author Accelerator and the author of Read Books All Day and Get Paid for It. Thanks to Jenny for joining me, and thanks to you, dear listeners, for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd love it if you could leave the Writescast Network a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. This will help the WritesCast Network reach more writers like you, and building that sense of community is what we, and I hope you, are all about. To those of you who have already left us a rating and review, thank you. And I'd also like to thank the WritesCast Network's patrons who contribute to our programming financially at patreon.com/WritesCast. In exchange for their support, WritesCast Network patrons get access to some great patron perks, including WritesCast Network swag, discounts on my editing services, and entries in monthly drawings for partial manuscript critiques performed by yours truly. If this sounds like something you'd be interested in, you can join patrons like Laura Hazen and Angeline Boley today in supporting our programming directly at $1, $2, or $3 per episode or per month. Any level of contribution will get you access to some of those fantastic patron perks, so become a supporter today by making your pledge at patreon.com/WritesCast. That's patreon.com/WritesCast. Thanks as well to our on-air sponsors, Dandelion Web Marketing and the Wisconsin Writers Association. To learn more about them or our other sponsors, you can visit writescast.net/sponsors. Coming up next on the WritesCast Network is a very special episode that will feature a number of voices from the writing community as part of our new Profiles in Encouragement initiative. I'm sure you'll be inspired by all of their insight when it hits Apple Podcasts, writescast.net, and your other favorite podcast listening platforms on May 1st. Until then, you can stay in touch with us by visiting writescast.net or by saying hello on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at WritesCast or by searching for the WritesCast Network. We're also available by email at writescast@gmail.com, and you can now call us at area code 608-284-8342, where you can leave a voicemail with questions for future guests or other matters you'd like us to address in our programming. Again, that number is 608-284-8342. To reach me personally, you can find me at rrcampbellwrites.com or get in touch on Twitter, where I can be found as @IamRRCampbell. I love hearing from listeners of all backgrounds, so please don't hesitate to reach out. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, this is R.R. Campbell signing off. Write on and write well. This is the WritesCast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing and the Wisconsin Writers Association, and always streaming at writescast.net.